The following is a KMOX sports special.
Our city, our spirit.
Welcome to the City Spotlight.
It's in! City goal!
Now, your host, Jen Cease, on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
There we go. That sounds a little bit better. It's not me trying to pretend to be Matt Pauly. This is Jen Cease in the downtown studios of KMOX Radio. I just filled in for Matt for the Sports Open Line, so I'm taking one hat off and putting another hat on. He'll be back for Sports Open Line and all things Cardinal baseball, St. Louis Blues. There's Battle Hawks. There's a ton of sports going on here in St. Louis, and Matt will cover it all. In the meantime, we're going to switch over to the City Spotlight. That's where we get to take an hour a week or so to cover all things St. Louis City SC and even other soccer. We often talk local soccer, such as club soccer, high school soccer. At this point in time, though, we're going to shift to big news from last night. The U.S. men's national team in what seems to be a stunner lost in the CONCACAF Nations League to Panama in a 90-plus, I can't remember the exact minute, but a stoppage in added time was scored on with a lot of people really upset. And here to give us perspective is Ty Keough, former U.S. men's national team player himself and, of course, broadcaster. Ty, thanks for joining me to talk about a topic I didn't really want to talk about, but I got it.
Well, you're right, Jen. The focus really comes down hard, over the next, what are we talking about now? Probably 15 months until the World Cup is hosted by the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And the wake-up call that the U.S. men's national team got last night in that loss to Panama, I think it helps because there's enough months that some of the issues can be addressed and people can really do some soul searching, because this is a match that was a competitive match, not a friendly. It's a CONCACAF Nations Cup. And so the really bad thing is that they would have gotten a second game that really meant a lot. If they had gotten past Panama, they would have been playing Sunday against Mexico, who had beaten Canada in the other semifinal. And that's always a great test to play Mexico in terms of the CONCACAF power structure. You want to match up against the toughest teams. But, we'll be playing against Canada in the third place game on Sunday, which still, because of the political situation, perhaps could be a little bit politically charged. But the fact is, you're going to be hosting a World Cup, and Panama has kept the U.S. out of a World Cup before. And, they can't do it this time because we're a host country and automatically qualify. But in terms of the actual play by the U.S. team, uninspired, Pochettino, the coach, the new manager, relatively new manager for the U.S. men's national team, called it, I think, painful to watch. And it certainly was. There was not much creativity and not really any dangerous attacks hardly coming out of the U.S. team, except, I guess, Sargent, the St. Louis guy, it looked pretty dangerous up front, had a goal called back to, also because of an offside call.
Yeah, just kind of looking around, we had it on in our house as well last night, whether you were actively watching or walking around, certainly taking a look at, I remember where I was standing when, my husband lost his mind and my son did as well, and looked up in hopes that it was a good thing, and it wasn't, and getting reactions all over from, Landon Donovan weighing in on it, to saying it was underwhelming, to Alexi Lalas, who does not hold himself back, disgraceful, and then also, though, Ty, then finding an article or two that says, hey, why this doesn't spell complete doom. Is there a middle ground for that? Are there things that was it a disgrace, and or can it lead to the next right step?
Well, it's a huge disappointment because you expect the U.S. to be able to get past a team, a country like Panama, and get into the final against Mexico. So there's no question that the expectations are much higher, and it is very emotional to see the U.S. With all of the advantages we have, all of these players that make big money in Europe coming back to participate in this particular competition and still not getting the results. So I could see that. I could see really having an edge to some of the critique. But you can also give some credit to the Panamanians. I mean, they played a very disciplined game, a very physical game. And they made it tough for the U.S. team to create much of a rhythm in terms of creating dangerous attacks. So, you know, that balances it out a little bit. I think Panama did a really good job. But the U.S. team, I think they're going to have to tinker with several things. If you look closely at the U.S. lineup, Yunus Musa is not really a right back. Weston McKennie is not really a right winger. You know, these guys were playing in positions. You know, Pochettino, he's trying to work. He's trying to circle the square. You know, he's got Tyler Adams.
That's a great way
back.
To put it.
Where do you put him? Reyna should have been put on at halftime after the what some people called a disgraceful display in terms of creativity out of midfield for the U.S. team in the first half. Because he does do things that are unexpected, that are extremely creative with his vision and so forth. Because you could see the frustration by Christian Pulisic and Josh Sargent, and especially Pulisic started dropping more and more and more and more back into midfield because he wanted to get involved because nothing was happening out of there. And to me, that was just crying for bringing Reyna's talents into the attacking midfield there so that Pulisic maybe could go out on that left wing, move Weah to the right wing. Because, again, Weston McKennie's not a right winger, so we weren't getting any danger from that right-hand side. And these are all things that need to be tinkered with, and it's a good thing that they were very easily, I think, discovered by Pochettino by just watching closely what went on in most of that match.
You know, last but not least, I'll ask you, because I feel like as we switch over to City in the next segment and talk to Dale Shilly, that, you know, City has a new goalkeeper right now at the moment, Ben Lunt. And Ben and I talked, actually, he'll be the interview at the end of the bottom of the hour, and talked about how, you know, as a goalkeeper, you can't win the game for your team, but you can often feel like you lose the game for your team. And of course, Matt Turner coming under scrutiny for making the save, not making the save, but of course there are 10 guys in front of you that didn't score and the ball got there. Is there a way that you look at that from where you played before, Ty, and how you see Matt Turner not coming up big at the same time 10 other guys didn't
well,
make it happen either?
I'm biased here. I mean, you can't blame Matt Turner for the loss, but you do need a goalkeeper that can come up with the big play at the right time. We've been spoiled here in St. Louis with Berkey obviously doing that for us. Now, on the U.S. bench, and one of the three goalkeepers currently in the camp is Patrick Schulte, a St. Louis guy. So he deserves a chance. I think Turner, you know, maybe is coming under more pressure with young guys like Schulte kind of want to make a debut for his job. And, he didn't do the job on that game-winning goal in stoppage time. And, you know, maybe get Schulte in there. Maybe he can make the big save at the big time and find a place into the World Cup team. And while we're talking about St. Louis, guys, I mentioned Josh Sargent earlier, you know, having a couple of really good chances, including the one that was called back. But Tim Ream looks like he's still really got it based on his performance in the match last
night. He looked good.
It's, you know, and you couldn't have convinced me a year or two ago that he'd still be around potentially for the 2026 World Cup. But I'm looking at it now in a 2026 World Cup, roughly, you know, 15 months away. I think he could do it. And I think he could be a big part of any success that the U.S. team might have. So, I mean, I'm ecstatic to see a guy like him with his experience and his dedication and with that captain's armband and everything else, a St. Louis guy making us proud.
Thanks a lot, Ty. We look forward to checking in with you as they continue their play throughout the year and more.
Okay, sounds good, Jen. Nice talking to you.
You Take too. Care. That was Ty Keogh, former U.S. men's national team player himself and broadcaster, talking to us about the U.S. men's national team loss to Panama last night. Their next game is against Canada for third place in the CONCACAF Nations League Sunday, March 23rd at 5 p.m. More soccer to come. This time, our MLS home team, St. Louis City SC, undefeated in the MLS and the only team yet to concede a goal. We'll talk about it with Y98 game analyst Dale Shilly next on KMOX.
Now, back to the City Spotlight.
Our city! Our spirit!
Once again, Jen Cease on KMOX.
Edward Wright.
Get in there! Yes!
Get it, baby! Oh, baby! Edward Lumen! City lead!
You heard it there. Joey Zannaboni and Dale Shilley on the call as City had their first home win and also for the first time took points with Seattle here recently, winning that game. Dale Shilley, St. Louis City Academy Director and Game Analyst on Y98. You were also on that call, Dale. That was an exciting set piece from Edward Leuven.
Well, I think it's the first time Joey saw Edward score.
Is that right? He acted now, like
what
it.
What a hit by Adu. I mean, you know, we talked about it before the restart. When you're too close to the 18, it takes a different type of strike than what we saw from Adu. If you're around 18, 19 yards out, it's really inside of the foot, and you kind of got to just spin the ball over top of the wall and hit it a little more concerned with direction than power. But he was there. He was probably 25, 27 yards out. And he got to really unleash it. And, you know, when you watch the replay, it went up over the wall and then dipped down and beat the keeper about waist height. He really had a lot of action on the ball.
Yeah, I was looking at that as well just to kind of prep for the show again and revisit it. And I was like, wow, look at the space he's given Adu, and he's daring him to go there. And you can't do that when Adu puts that right inside the post.
Well, the problem, though, Jen, is you can't. You can, as a goalkeeper, you're responsible for the space that's not covered by the wall. And that would be the space at the back post. If he gets beat, the goalkeeper, if Fry gets beat to the back post, then it's a problem on him. At that moment that he, you know, you got the wall set up, you got all your tall guys in the wall, you've got everything situated, he's responsible for dealing with the back post. If Adu can put it up and over the wall and get it to dip in, you can dive and try all you want and hope that you can get a finger to it. But, you know, kudos to the shooter when they can finish a shot like that.
Of course. And overall, as you know, you've heard him this week, Coach Melberg, pleased with City's performance. Of course, things to tweak. But a couple of other players talked about how great it was. I don't think Olaf felt the pressure himself not being at City, but the City players certainly felt a little pressure wanting to finally grab some points when it came to dealing with the Sounders. I got to talk a little bit with Ben Lunt, and we'll play with his interview after your segment here. The fact that, you know, Coach and him, they talked about how it's so much nicer to be ready each week, to have like a full week of training. He's got a little bit different of a profile than Roman Berkey. Normally he's ready there just in case. Kyle Hebert was at the press conference today and talking about Roman's qualities and also Ben's.
Yeah, I mean, I think he really is a very complete goalie. You know, you've seen him in the Galaxy game where we need him to make some huge saves. Distribution is phenomenal. With that being said, I think Ben, you know, this fourth clean sheet, Ben Lunt was in goal, calm, composed, handled his box really well, distribution good, you know, found some good long balls out of pressure. So I think our goalie room is super strong, and that's a big credit to all the guys working in there.
Yeah, certainly, Dale, and I would imagine that is a comforting thing for not only the guys who see Ben show up. I mean, I watch the guys score on Roman, believe it or not, and I watch Ben make plenty of saves. But also for Ben to walk into a City defense that's a whole lot more organized this year, it seems.
Well, I would say that he's benefiting from the deeper defending. You know, Ben's strength is going to be controlling the 18, dealing with crosses, shot stopping. I would say that if you had to pick out a weakest part of his game, it might be balls played in behind the back four and covering 40 yards of space when the line is high. But the way that we're playing now, the line's deeper, that really plays right into Ben's hand, and he can be very confident with his abilities to deal with balls played inside the box and shot stopping and that sort of thing. We saw that the other night. He made a couple of good plays. He only got called on to make one save, but he had to cut the one ball out. It was driven across the box, and he punched it clear. Made a good decision, one on a cross to punch it one-handed, the other one to dive out and punch it beyond the 18. So, yeah, it plays right into his hands. It's really good to see him get the opportunity to put consecutive games back-to-back, and we'll see how he handles, you know, 3, 4, 5 games, whatever that number is, when he knows that he's going to be the guy going forward.
And, of course, I know you're out in Philadelphia right now, right? You and Joey landed safely
We are out in Philly getting ready for the game.
All right. And when it comes to, you know, the big questions, of course, this week in terms of asking players like Kyle, What's that going to be like to face up against Indiana Vasilev? Kyle admitting it's going to be lovely to say hello to him after we win. You know, we'll leave the niceties for after the game. But also, both him, Kyle, and Olaf Melberg talked a little bit about, you know, previewing Philadelphia in terms of the fact that there's really no secrets. They know the profile of the team, but that's not really the issue when it comes to Philly, that knowing them.
I don't think there'll be too many surprises in the way they play, but they do it well. And even though you are aware of it, they can create danger, you know, as they have done in the start of the season. So, you know, we have to really be up for the battle, winning the fight, winning the second ball, not dwell on the ball for longer periods of time because they like to press. It's a high-energy team, and they like to get in behind defensive lines, fill the box, and they have been dangerous there. So we've got to be up for it on Saturday.
You know, Dale, that reminds me of how anybody speaks when you talk about Lionel Messi. When you talk about Lionel Messi, you know he's going to cut on you, and you can prepare for it, and you know he's probably going to beat you. And it makes it sound like that's the way they've had to think about Philly. You can prepare for that, but let's not fool ourselves that they are good at their job of the press.
And what's interesting is, in my preparation for the game tomorrow night, it's like you're looking back into a mirror from a year ago. So you would always see, hey, we're winning the ball in the front half more often than the opponent, and we're winning balls in the middle third, and we're getting to goal in shorter number of passes and in less number of seconds, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now it's the other side of the coin for us. Now we're the team that's sitting deep. They're the team that's winning the ball higher up the field. So it's the complete opposite. You know, teams in the past would say, okay, let's give St. Louis City the ball and see what they're like on the ball.
Right.
And now it's the opposite. Now we're going to allow them to have the ball and see if we can be on the break. So it's going to be a really interesting matchup to see what it's like on this side of the fence against Bradley. Who has the ball the least? Because you know Bradley only wants 40% of the ball.
Max.
We've only had 37% of the ball. Who doesn't want the ball, and who's going to win? Do they need to have the ball, or do we both want to try to play in the break? It's a great matchup. I can't wait to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, and of course, you know, let's call a spade, too. Time is ripe, potentially, to take advantage again of a team who's not at their full strength, having players out for the break, having other things going on. But Kyle Hebert did talk about, to paraphrase him a little bit, they expected, he said it could be windy there. I don't know what the weather is going to look like, but regardless of the wind, he expects potentially that chaos that Bradley likes to create in his attacking third. It'll be City's defensive third, that he called on the need for it to be clean, to not, you know, to take care of any loose balls. You've got to have those 50-50s, one, no silly turnovers, and, you know, don't give very much away. You just can't do that with a team like the Union.
The game is going to be windy. I'm going to give you a clue in a little bit here. We are going to be stationed and positioned outside of the press box. We will be amongst the people once again, and the wind blowing off of the river, so it should be interesting. But
good to know.
The conditions are not going to be ideal because it is going to be windy. It's going to be in the mid-40s, that's what it is. And I think both teams are willing to grind and be gritty and figure out how to scrap and claw to get the chances that they need to score goals. And to your point, your initial point is they'll be missing some players to national team duty. That's just the nature of the game. That's what happens when you build your rosters the way that that they've built their roster. And so they know they're going to be missing guys certain times of the year. Happens to fall in a game when we play them. And hopefully we can get out with 3 points and don't apologize. Just work hard to get it.
Yeah, and I'd be remiss. My last question for you is about another position, just one that City's got a little bit of lack of depth in, and Olaf talked about it this week. Thomas Totland out for a month with hamstring. Not as deep there. He did mention there are center backs who can do that job. Of course, Konrad Vollum is multi, you know, he can do both sides. And Akil Watts, he's done that as well. It'd be interesting to know what he chooses to go with for this next game.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the system. You know, what you need from that wide position is much different in a 3-5-2 than it would be from a 5-4-1. So you could always drop a keel back into that spot, which could open maybe something up for Salio or somebody in that wide position in a 4-man midfield. If we're 3-5-2, then I think we'll see a keel in that role. Although, you know, to be honest, you could go with Vollum and Kyle Hebert as well. It just depends on the matchups that Olof wants.
It's not a bad problem to have. Thanks, Dale, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, 6 p.m. on Y98 for what sounds going to be a windy pregame.
That's right. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Dale. That's Dale Shilley, Y98 analyst. You can hear him and Joey Zanaboni on City's next game. They're away on the East Coast against Philly, so that means an earlier start here in St. Louis. So tomorrow, Saturday, March 22nd, pregame at 6 p.m. on our sister station, Y98. By the way, Y98 is where I'll be for the game, while some other fans are going to get a great different experience for Women's History Month watch party at Minetta Pitch Club. Women fans are invited to join the club for a watch party at Energizer Park. You kind of get the full city experience, but they're away, but in the Minetta Pitch Club, which is awesome, by the way, if you haven't been there. Tickets are still on sale. They haven't sold out. It includes food, two drinks, a caricature artist. You get to go pitch side and take some pictures. Sounds like a lot of fun. Visit City's website to find out more. Hang with us on the City Spotlight. We're going to hear a preview of this game's player profile with fill-in new City goalkeeper Ben Lunt. He's up next on KMOX.
Now, back to the City Spotlight.
Our city! Our spirit!
Once again, Jen Cease on KMOX.
Back on the City Spotlight here at KMOX. Well, as we all know by now, the best goalkeeper in MLS is sidelined with an injury. City's Roman Berkey will be out for a month, and I quote, or so, because I'm thinking it might be longer, with a fracture in one of his hands, like right with the wrist area. But seamlessly stepping in for the team's fourth clean sheet in Seattle was Ben Lunt. Against Seattle at home was Ben Lunt. He and I caught up after training earlier this week to talk about his performance, his experience, and what's in store for him now.
Obviously a nice feeling. Boys played incredible, especially the back line from top to bottom. Defensively, we're working really hard. Overall, really nice feeling to win.
Can you talk to me about what happened with Roman's injury on Friday? Did you have any indication like, hey, this could be me? I know he called you the next day. How did that all go down?
I mean, there was a weird shot and I saw something happen, but I didn't think it was too bad. Little injuries happen. Roman usually is really good at pushing through. And then, yeah, he texted me Saturday morning that he was feeling something. He needs to get an image, which was a really nice gesture of him. Helped me to prepare for the game. And I was just, yeah, let's get ready. Let's see what happens. And yeah, I got the call from the goalkeeper coach. Roman couldn't go. And then, yeah, had to step in.
So you have like a matter of hours to really know that you're going to be in. Does that change then what you do on that day?
To be honest, not really. Every week, starting on Monday, I try to prepare as good as possible because, again, you never know. So I take pride in my job, training hard and training as good as possible every single week. So it wasn't really a big shock then to play because I felt prepared.
You know, it's interesting that you just said that about preparation. I just saw a podcast of former pro goalkeepers all kind of talking together, and their two main things came out. One, you have to kind of wear a shield because you can feel as a goalkeeper, you can't win the game for your team, but you can feel like you can lose the game for your team. And they also talked about preparation, that you can feel confident knowing that you've done everything you could the entire week.
Yeah, goalkeeping is an interesting position. It's the loneliest position on the field. You can have a bad training week and play amazing. You can have a fantastic training week and you can mess the game up. For me, this game, it went away. I didn't have to be the hero. I just had to be solid. You know, that's sometimes what it is as a goalkeeper. But sometimes you're called upon and you have to make 2-3 big saves to maybe win the game. In this case, I just had to be solid, had to be connected with my back line, and the boys did the rest.
You've been here the entire time. You've seen how City has changed under Coach Carnell, then John Hackworth, and now Olof Mellberg. How was that stepping into a team, though, that seems to really have focused on dialing up the defense and making sure that was solid? You get to step in there with no disorganization.
I've been with the group for 3 years now, so it takes a lot of preparation and hard work to show every coach that is stepping in that I want to be the guy in case something happens. It doesn't come overnight. You know, it's been every week training hard and showing the coaching staff that they can rely on me. But yeah, we know what to do. I've been there in preseason. I played preseason games. We had time a lot now in preseason and now starting the first 4 weeks. So I know what the game plan was. I know how we're supposed to shift, how we're supposed to move, and then I can help with a little bit of communication from the back.
And of course, Coach Mellberg challenging all players to be box-to-box players. So defense is not just occurring with Henry Kessler and the back line. It's occurring up front with whoever's up top.
Yeah, it's a mentality, really. It really steady, Teuchert working really hard on top. You can see it when Simon is coming coming in, when Klaus is coming in, they're all working really hard on top, and it makes it a little bit easier for the whole team. And again, we're talking about, it's a trigger situation, a trigger point. When you see your teammate working hard, it triggers the other guy to work hard, and it just trickles down to the back, and it just makes it easier for everybody.
Was there a particular most challenging point about the Seattle game for you as a goalkeeper?
Honestly, just stepping in, the conditions weren't easy. It was raining. It was a little bit slippery. We hadn't gotten a point against Seattle. All those kind of things play a factor. So I just wanted to come in, play solid, help the team, and that's really it, yeah.
I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I was cozy in the booth. I wasn't getting rained on. But watching you choosing the punch save, and that was because it was raining and the ball was wet, right?
It was my first game now for a while, so you just want to play really rock solid. You don't want to take too much risk and then something happens. You know, that's the worst case. The first game is always the most difficult one. Now it gets a little bit easier. Game two, maybe game three, things just get easier from then. You can take a little bit more of a risk. You have more confidence. It's just the nature of things. So everybody needs a little bit of time. And I just had that now. I feel really good about the 90 minutes against Seattle and looking forward to build on that.
So, of course, the team wants Roman back as soon as possible. Hope he's not hurt for long, but might have consistency for you. What does consistency game to game do for a goalkeeper?
It does a lot, really. With every minute, you get more confident. You get stronger, really. So the 90 minutes were really nice. And again, with every minute, with every half, I get more confident and the guys get more confident in me, which is a change because Roman has been playing here for the last 2 years and starting year three. But I feel really good about the team and I think the team feels good about me. And I just can't wait to, you know, go out there again on Saturday.
Philadelphia Union facing City's very first head coach, Bradley Carnell. Got a little preview. What do you think we might see for Philadelphia Union?
Yeah, I think it's an advantage for us. You know, we know how Bradley Carnell wants to play. We're going to be prepared. We want to get another good result on the road. I think that's most important for us because we struggled with that last year. Getting that first win against Galaxy was big for us. And again, that just creates confidence for the whole team. Hey, we can win on the road. That's just really our main focus, to get another result on the road.
City fill-in goalkeeper for a time, Ben Lundt, talking with him about City's intent on another road win, of course, this time against their former first-ever coach, Bradley Carnell, and his Philadelphia Union. Stay right here. One more segment to go, and it's one we haven't had since the start of the season, and I've heard about it, by the way. It's time to talk some laws of the game with former FIFA and MLS assistant referee George Gansner. He's up next on KMOX.
Now, back to the City Spotlight.
Our city! Our spirit!
Once again, Jen Cease on KMOX.
Back with you for the last segment of the City Spotlight, but don't go anywhere. This one's an important one. We haven't done one since last season, so it's that time.
Now, laws of the game.
Joining me now for Laws of the Game is George Gansner, former FIFA and MLS assistant referee. George, thanks for joining me tonight and also being understanding that we really just didn't have a whole lot to talk about the first few City games.
Hey, I'm doing my happy dance, but it's not because there's been no controversy. It's because I still have an intro.
They found it. They dug it out of the archives. We found it. So let's go.
They were deep, I'm sure.
Let's go through the game. So we talk a little bit. You know, you and I were actually looking a little bit at some of the highlights and replays today. And, you know, just noted it kind of was lost on me that in the first 2 minutes, there were a couple of fouls pretty quickly called on City. Akil Watts with what I wondered, was it really that bad of a shoulder tackle? Durkins was pretty obvious from behind. And then at 2:30, so like 30 seconds away, Hartle goes down inside near the box, doesn't get a call. Can you just tell me what that does to set up the stadium for, hey, I've called these pretty hard and I'm going to let that one go. And then at the 3 minute mark, Kessler grabs a shoulder and there's another foul on City.
Yeah, it was a very, really interesting start to the match, right? So, you know, the shoulder tackle that on, I don't remember our player, but on Nuhu.
Akil, Watts.
Akil, yeah, could have been not called, right? Now, that's going to, that early in the match is going to show the players, hey, you're going to get away with a lot today. And then makes the referee's job either potentially harder, depending on how it goes. Or, you know, everything could be perfectly fine. So you're at that point taking a risk. And Fotis Bazakos decided not to take a risk that early in the match. You know, then you move into another foul and then against St. Louis City and then what appears to be a potential shoulder grab. I think you said it was Hartle going into the penalty area. You know, he chose not to call it, and then he was a bit inconsistent when he calls the foul just moments later on Henry Kessler for doing essentially the same thing. So, you know, I think the game settled in after that. It got the crowd into it, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think, you know, that's always a fine line as a referee, is how do you want to not manage the game? Because that's not a fair statement. But what is your line, right? What are you drawing that line at for the players? And, you know, I think it turned out all right in the end, and that was maybe a little bit frustrating for everyone, including myself, especially the shoulder tug on Kessler right after he didn't give one to St. Louis for Hartle.
Yeah. So we fast forward then to the 14th minute. There's a yellow card on Seattle. Jackson Reagan, he does. He slips. The game was wet by that time. His stud slipped, of course. Does grab the ball, which was, you know, fully intentional. But it's a yellow card and not a red card, even though it looked like, because that's a promising attack, right, and not a clear goal-scoring opportunity. That's the yellow card?
Yeah. That's correct. There are two defenders who are clearly in play to not allow St. Louis, or to at least make an attempt to keep St. Louis from having a clear goal scoring opportunity. So no problem with that at all. And he's stopping a promising attack by grabbing the ball. It's pretty easy.
Now, hang on, though. If he's the last defender and outside the box and that happens, is that a straight red?
It would be straight red. If he had been the last defender and he grabbed it and a St. Louis player is going to go in on a breakaway, that would be a red card.
All right. So, good. So, only a minute away, though. From some of that pressing, right, from some of that action, City got the free kick, Leuven scores, first home goal of the season. And then we have a game that stays pretty tight. Seattle battling, of course, and City battling. The score remained 1-0. And we look to then corner kicks. And the corner kicks I'm talking about are at 40 and 42, where it looked like there's a VAR review involved. Now, what we see on TV is Kessler and Nuhu having a really intimate conversation about what each other's problem is, if I'm reading lips right. But you pointed out that it's really not them that was the VAR, it was two other players.
Yeah, that was the show, right? That was where everybody's attention was, because they were dancing. And I think if I were Henry Kessler, I would have given Mr. Nuhu a hug.
yeah, but, I think he tried to.
Maybe. So, but on the back post, and you see this on the replay, you don't really see it in the stadium either, but on the back post, you have Wallum from St. Louis and Ferreira from Dallas, who are going at it pretty good too. Just not as blatantly going at it, right? And in one instance there, it looks like there's a possibility that Ferreira potentially punches Wallum. Now, that didn't happen. He did look like he slapped him. Wallum kicks out a bit when he's on the ground. I'm really happy that they didn't give a penalty to St. Louis for that, because this is boys being boys on a penalty, on a corner kick. And like it or not, and I know you don't like it.
I don't like it. Those wraparounds on corner kicks are ridiculous. That's what they do in American football. Come on.
Yeah, but in the end, right, this is guys fighting for position and trying to get what they can on a corner, and it's both offense and defense. And I'm really happy they let them go. So,
this is why you guys get booed. This is why you guys get booed. I need a boo track, John. Boo track.
The assistant referee on the backside there had to have seen it, right? He had to have seen something. I've been in that position many, many times. I don't know if he gave an indication or if VAR instantly said, hey, we're going to look at this because something may have happened. But it was handled really well by the referee crew. It was handled really well. And then inevitably, when you have that much dancing, as soon as the ball's put into play, you have a free kick coming out almost instantly, almost every time. Fair or unfair, what you don't know as a fan is the referee is more than likely having a conversation with the defenders, or already had the conversation that said, hey, listen, the first one's going to go out, the next one's going to go to the penalty spot. So you guys decide how you want this to go, because I'm just got to blow the whistle.
All right, well, let's talk about that. Talk about almost going to the penalty spot. This one's at 90+2. Looks to be a trip by Kessler on Vargas, and we were really nervous at this point.
Yeah, yeah, so...
the right side, Leyva looking for a ball!
No!
They give it to him! A penalty kick for Seattle!
And then, of course, we get the good news, though, from VAR.
By number 18, Seattle. Final decision is no penalty.
No penalty!
There you go, George. So there was the call for you to relive. Sorry about that. But yeah, it looks like it was something that literally almost gave Seattle a point rather than City taking the full reviewed. And it took several minutes to get that done.
Yeah, so very quickly, here's what happened. So as the Seattle player is pulling the ball through, the ball comes off of one of the St. Louis defender that's with him. I don't remember. I think maybe Kessler. It then goes down to the forward from Seattle's hand and hits his hand, which is in an unnatural position, right? So I do know for a fact they were looking to see whether or not there was any additional deflection off the forward's leg, because that would have negated a handball. But in any case, the foul itself that was given for the penalty was not what was reviewed. It was the handball. So, little fortuitous in St. Louis's favor. The call itself was a bit soft, but at the end of the day, they wouldn't overturn the foul. St. Louis is lucky that it was a handball there.
All right. Thanks, George. We'll call on you again when we need the laws reviewed.
Sounds great. Thanks, right, Jen.
Thank you. That was George Gansner, former FIFA and MLS referee, joining us for Laws of the Game. Well, the show's done, believe it or not. If you missed any part of this City Spotlight, you can always find it free on the Odyssey app under the podcast section. It also, by the way, has previous content like all pregame interviews with City players and special interviews with Coach Olaf Melberg each week. Consider it your one-stop shop reverence for all things City on KMOX and Y98. Next MLS regular season game for City is away on the East Coast. Tomorrow, Saturday, March 22nd, pregame at 6 p.m. on our sister station, Y98. The Gas House Gang is coming up next after the news. I'm Jen Cease, and you've been listening to the City Spotlight on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.